I am live. All right. Hi, I'm Matt with Schematical. And with me, as always, is Dominic DeMarco. And welcome to another CTO Coffee Hour, where I'm actually drinking Diet Dr. Pepper. And with me today, a special guest star, Teeling, my pup here, who doesn't want to get off my lap because it's cold here. Today,
Happy Tuesday.
We have to start. Now, you're going to jump right back. I say we did have today's topic all set up. Anybody that paid attention saw the title changed. And then yesterday about, well, a good chunk of the internet fell over and we thought it might be interesting to talk about that. So sorry, segue back to you.
No, that's all right. I was just about to explain why the title's changed. So yeah, the internet broke. It looks like it was some DNS issue that originally was related to DynamoDB, but what's really interesting is how, you know, you think I don't use DynamoDB, not going to affect me at all, right? It affected everything because it turns out, you know, I've got some theories here because it's AWS hasn't fully stated, you know, done a postmortem or anything yet. It's only been a few, you know, 24 hours ago, everything was on fire. And so, the interesting part is that evidently DynamoDB holds what appears to be is IAM. That's the back end where IAM credentials are stored, things like that. It's definitely where orchestration of EC2 instances is done. And so it's all tracked via Dynamo, I guess, under the hood. And they don't tell you this. It's a black box, but this is what I'm gathering from what I've seen so far. And so it had this cascading effect where just because the simple DNS problem propagated, then what happened is that these records all built up.
Let me get you, if I'm hearing you right, I couldn't log in because somewhere behind something like Cognito, DynamoDB is doing something and it can't connect. And this is specific to Virginia, or is this elsewhere?
It was primarily Virginia. From what I heard, rumblings of it being outages being elsewhere, but there's certain, like if it was IAM credentials, so difference between IAM credentials and Cognito. Cognito is where your end user logs in. IAM is where your engineers log in. So if it was IAM and that was primarily stored in Dynamo in US East, then you would have trouble logging into the console across the board likely. You know, and they don't have region specific IAM users. Usually if you got an IAM user, you can define region specific permissions, but you could theoretically go to US West 2 or something and you'd have limited access, but you'd have some access there. And so it was really fascinating to see that. But the people I have access to in Ohio, they didn't see a blip going on. So I don't think AWS services running to end users were affected in other places as much as they were in US East, but it's possible it had some secondary degradation there. So I'm getting mixed stories though. I mean, the reports on the internet from Yahoo's, whoever, they saying the whole thing was down. AWS has only officially said it was US East.
So I'm gonna go a little bit off topic here and then let you come back. So how I figured out this was happening was a very poor user experience. I was working with some audio video software, let's call it, a SaaS-based system, and everything was freezing and locking up on me. And one of your least favorite technologies in the world drove me absolutely crazy, and that is a chatbot in the bottom right corner, saying, I can't do this, I can't do this, and could never get through to a person. And what an amazing missed opportunity I think that could have been. First of all, I mean, later we were there, we saw there's a banner on the page many hours later. But why, I mean, you know you're having an outage. Why isn't that the first thing the chatbot tells me instead of letting me get aggravated? So you don't have to answer that, you get it. But I found out through a very poor user experience that just the internet was broken and I was getting angry at a single site.
The chances are deploying code was degraded as well, because I mean that underlying that every single code pipeline record or code build record possibly was down. Provisioning new EC2 instances was an issue, so I didn't see any issues in scaling with ECS at the time, but it's possible they couldn't boot up enough hardware to build and release new code at the time. You know, it might've been that challenge. It all depends on how you host the site. If it was, you know, as far as I know, S3 didn't get hit or anything like that. So if it was an S3 site or something, you might've been able to deploy, you know, something that way. But yeah, we saw the same thing on a couple of websites that put up flags for the day saying, hey, we had an outage. A secondary issue that was interesting is, so I'm circling back again. And
that was my segue. I'm done. I just wanted a minute of a rant to say, please tell your bots when there's something going wrong.
Yeah. I'm sorry to laugh at your suffering, man.
I use lots of colorful language.
I can imagine. So the secondary effect though, of all this stuff going down is that the queues stopped working. So we ended up, queues basically have a list of tasks that accumulate throughout the day. Maybe every time someone buys something or a certain transaction happened, or you've got a event, you know, that pops up every hour you've got to run or every 5 minutes. And those built up really big because they couldn't get the compute to process through those events. So the result is that their queues in AWS batch were backlogged like crazy. And so, you know, now you've got all these people that are, you know, these you got to decide, do we clear the queue or do we, you know, delete certain things from the queue that we don't need to process more than once? You know, what do you do there? So for any
okay. I was thinking through some of my actions in this frustration I had yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if I didn't put 100 things in a queue by clicking all sorts of buttons.
You're probably not the only one. I mean, I'm sure that's happened all over the internet. But this is just a lesson for disaster continuity of business and things like that, is to have clear parameters on which jobs to clear, which queues to clear, which can be cleared and which cannot be cleared. So make sure that is part of your disaster recovery plan in the event, you know, you end up with a massive queue, and it's very common, right sizing.
All right. So you're jumping to the end. We've talked about what happened. Why don't we start in the middle now, saying nobody can avoid the internet going down in its entirety, right? But what are some things that you do or would do to minimize the potential impact of unknown things taking down different parts of the internet, right? So this time it was DynamoDB and DNS. It's going to be something else and something else in the future. So you can't bulletproof yourself. But no. How could you strap on a little bit of protection against something?
Well, you could go multi-region. That's one possibility. Multi-cloud is another option, but it's getting tougher and tougher with more these optimized services specifically for one cloud provider. But multi-region could have helped with this one. If you had an application layer at minimum running in multiple regions, and ideally, you know, your data source, even if it was Dynamo, I think it probably still would have stood up in the other regions though. Again, this happened very recently, so I haven't double checked that, but
would you have to replicate your data between regions or something in that context?
So let's just say we're doing RDS. You can do cross region replication with RDS, things like that. So you'd have readers and writers. I guess you'd have one writer, but then when that writer fell over in region whatever, you could run an election and force another reader to take over as the writer in region B, you know, US West one or something like that.
Now, is this something that you have to engineer anything with code to recognize your money running multi-region and to switch traffic, or is this purely an infrastructure and infrastructure configuration sort of thing?
It all,
it depends.
It depends on how you build it. Yeah, it depends. Actually, I got an article on this to elaborate on my multi-tenant architecture stuff, because this is similar. Multi-regions similar to multi-tenant. So you've got some options on how you set it up. It all starts with the DNS though. So you can have multi-region kind of DNS to some extent there that then knows, that does health checks cross region. So it could say, hey, you can geotag basically say, hey, they're on the east side of the country, send them to the US East, But then you go in there one day, US East is on fire, assuming you can log in via IAM, mm-hmm. get authenticated. Then you could say, you know, hey, turn off US East, you know, or you can put a health check on it that says US East is not responding. Don't
run the load balancer do that automatically then?
It would, it's a load balancing via the DNS. It's actually not like an ALB. So it mm-hmm. starts there, and then you could route it. I mean, you could route it through ALBs or API gateway, basically, and all that stuff. But that would have likely helped. I can't say that for sure, though. Again, like I said, there's a lot of
We're not saying that you will never go down, but just general best practices to minimize your exposure to black swan events like this.
Yeah. So it starts with the DNS. Make sure you've got it so it routes to, you know, all the different application layers that you've got running in the various regions. From there, the application layers will need to have redundant databases as well. So that's good. And then from there, the interesting thing is the queues. I haven't actually done Kinesis cross region. I don't think SQS, I'd have to look into that. I've never actually done SQS cross region, but it's possible you could have all these things stuck in queue over and across the country. Now, if they're having trouble booting up compute resource in location in Virginia, but the queue's still up and running, it's possible you could have hot switched to a worker in, you know, US in Ohio or in California or something that would consume from that queue, because the queue is not the problem. It's the fact they couldn't boot up the compute resources to do this. And AWS batch, that's the case, but I don't know if you could consume as easily as you could from SQS. That's something we'd have to dig into. But it's all, you know, very.
Is there a massive amount of redundant hardware that's needed, or are you utilizing the hardware in both regions all the time and just relying exclusively on one if the other region falls over? Or a little bit of both.
So in the application layer, you should be able to right size it pretty easily. So you can have it both, especially if your traffic's distributed mm-hmm. across the country or across the planet. That should be fairly mm-hmm. easy to do. The database, you might end up with some redundancies there. That is possible because you'd need a complete copy of your data. Even if you partitioned it horizontally, now you'd have to have complete copies of your data. So you might end up with, you're more likely to end up with redundant costs on the data layer, in my opinion, than the application layer. The application layer is easier to scale. With that said, though, it should be fine-tuned. And I mean, the way you look at this, by the way, if you're looking at thinking about making this investment, how much did yesterday cost you? If it costs you less than the price of architecting out this infrastructure for, you know, a year or whatever, then you just, you know, then maybe that's not for you. But if it costs you a lot, which it did cost some people quite a bit, and that's, you know, 10x what the, you know, cost of the infrastructure investment is, or even if it's 2x, I don't know, you know, it depends on how risk averse you want to be, then that's what you use that to make the decision if you should go multi-region. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling later on this afternoon, I'm going to have a conversation with my clients, which managed to stay up for the most part, minor delays for one of them, but that's it. You know, so yeah, I have a feeling I'm gonna have that conversation later this afternoon, but yeah, just always be thinking about the return on investment for your infrastructure.
Well, and you're saying return on investment, but this is a very unique quantification exercise, return on investment. Cause you have to say, how many nines are we, how many nines do we want to be, and what's it going to cost to get to the difference on the, based upon the revenue delta between 3 nines and 5 nines, for example. Does that make sense?
So, yeah. And it also depends on the different services. Like, you know, my clients, the main website didn't barely flickered, but you know, you've got things in the queues that were, like I said, that type of stuff. So does that matter? You know, I don't even know if that cost the business a penny as far as I could tell. So,
So for them, it might've maybe slowed down orders a couple of hours that were sitting in a queue versus me frantically reclicking the generate button, making a frustrated customer. Their customer might not have known about the delay. Mm-hmm. And to your point, an order is something from the queue you couldn't delete. But if you see that I click generate on the same video 20 times, you should have to your reboot plan essentially saying, delete all duplicate requests.
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend doing that even if it wasn't an outage. Just be like, listen, you can't render 20 things at once, buddy. You know, so it's like we're already rendering. So, yeah, that would be a good move there. But yeah, you're exactly right. You're spot on with that math there. So, but yeah, there's definitely things you can do. And again, multi-cloud's also an option too. But that's tougher. You've got to use more data sources that aren't as unique. Like, I don't think RDS, even because you could do an SQL database, I don't know if you could add a read replica that's running in Google using RDS. You'd have to basically self-host your own databases, which comes with, and this is where engineers they get excited about this. You're gonna, a bunch of engineers are gonna be like, let's self-host and cross-cloud and all that stuff right now. Keep in mind the amount of engineering hours you have to put in to maintain those services and add that up. You know, the average.
Well, can you imagine? I did this back in the day of loading, you know, Linux, Apache, PHP, Node, etc., onto hardware. And that's essentially what we'd have to do then. If you're going to go cross platforms, you're going to have to run essentially the same stack everywhere.
You'd create a Docker image for your data layer. And then you'd have, you know, they'd have hard disks, you know, you have, you know, six instances on US West and six instances US East and then another six that are in GCP, and, you know, and they'd all be Docker images. You have to, and again, so you got to, then you have to maintain the hard drives because all of them have to write to disks and they all are set up differently. Mm-hmm. So it's doable.
But you lose a lot of the. You use a lot of the advantage of using a service provider like GCP or AWS because of the tools that you get along with them. So you're going to, you may get the utmost security, but you're going to have the utmost cost in maintenance if you track labor along with that.
Yep. Monitoring, you no longer get the baked in monitoring tools. You don't get the automatic updates. Now you got to have an engineer log into there and update the Docker files and all this stuff there. And, you know, worry about rolling updates that way. So it's doable. And you know, if you really need 1,000 nines uptime, it's what's preventing nuclear Armageddon, then by all means, let's do it. But if you're, if there's a black swan event once every 4 years, I mean, I honestly think this is the longest outage they've ever had, if I'm not mistaken. Usually it's, an hour or two and it's one service, but I should say maybe not the longest they've ever had, but one of the longest / most widespread at the same time. Mm-hmm. They probably had minor outages for, you know, things that have lasted longer for smaller stuff. But this one's pretty big. This one beats that S3 one, I think, that took down a whole bunch of the internet a while ago. So I'll be eager to read the postmortems on it. If people are interested in hearing more of my thoughts on the postmortems and want me to break down play for play what they're saying, I'd happily do it. If you're interested in having us take a look at your infrastructure, you've got a couple options. You know, you can join us and we consult on this stuff, or you can join the community, schematical.com/community, where we help people in a group setting with group coaching to keep your infrastructure up and running. So. Now that I've done that shameless plug, anything else that we should be covering right now?
Happy Tuesday. It's been another good jam. And maybe we'll get back to last week or this week's next week if nothing else crazy goes on.
Yeah.
Because then we like 2 weeks ago, we changed the topic, or 3 weeks ago when ChatGPT integrated all the selling features. So, you know, can get off and derailed.
Yeah. Right now, if everything goes well, I'll be talking about how to engineer scalable search engines that are cost effective and all the crazy details that go into that. Because if you do that wrong, it's going to be insanely expensive and slow, and you don't want that. So if anybody has search in their products, which pretty much every cloud-based product has some semblance of search, you're going to want to check that out.
Ruby, wrap it up.
All right. Now I get to figure out where the... Usually Dom runs the show, and I don't actually know where the end button is here. So bear with me as here we go. Okay, I got it. So, all right. Thank you. I'm Matt with Schematical, and have a great day. Bye.